We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The following is a special edition of the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
Welcome to Sports and More with Mike Claiborne. Sponsored by the world-famous Fast Eddie's Bonaire on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, what a treat it is to have a chance to visit with an old friend that's back in St. Louis. He's Joe Micheletti. How many years have you been involved in hockey? Because your career as a player is a stellar one. You coached, and now you find yourself being one of the most accomplished broadcasters the game has to offer.
You sound like you sound like maybe it's my time to get on with life or something.
I was going to ask you for money after this.
Oh, Mike, it's been such a fun run and such a fortunate run, and you know, nobody's been luckier than me. That's for sure. So, you know, I've been in New York. It's 20 years now I've been
really?
In New York. Yeah, believe it or not, 20 years in New York, but I come back here, Mike. You know, and it seems it's like yesterday. You know, I stayed with my son, Adam, who lives back in St. Louis now. I stayed with him and his wife and their little year-and-a-half-old daughter, and spent time together, you know, and just drove around the city a little bit yesterday and went to Blues practice. And it's just, you know, there's some things that have a special place in your heart, and this place has a special place in my heart.
Well, it was where you started as a player, but I'll even go back before that. You had the honor and privilege to play with one of the great coaches we'll ever talk about, and that's Herb Brooks.
You know, Herbie, when you're young, sometimes and most times, you don't understand what's happening, you know, and you scratch your head and go, well, why did he say that, and why did he do that, and why is he acting like this? I wish he'd get off my case, and all those things, and this goofball, what's he know? Right? And then you mature a little bit, and then he recognizes your maturity, and then you form a different relationship. And Herb Brooks became not only a mentor, but he became a great friend of my parents, who loved him dearly, and he became a brother to my other brothers and sisters. My eight brothers and sisters, he became a brother to them. And so it was a special relationship. I learned so much from him. We lost him, obviously, way too young. And when people say, are you surprised what he did? You know, who wouldn't be surprised in 1980 for any team to beat, you know, the Russians? But it didn't surprise me because of what I had gotten to know about him.
You know, it's funny you talk about when coaches get on you and they climb all over you. And you're like, why me? And then somebody will tell you, well, if he didn't like you, he wouldn't do what he's doing to you. And I think he's a classic example of that, and probably knew when it was time to get off of you.
You know, he, I think more than anyone that I've ever played for or been associated with, had this innate ability to get inside somebody and really understand that particular person and that particular player. And I'll just give you an example. I remember when I was a senior at Minnesota, and I was the captain, and our first half of the season, it was a real struggle. We had all these lousy freshmen like Rob McClanahan and Steve Kristoff and Don Micheletti and I'm missing a few others, but
how are we going to win with this bunch?
Yeah, how are we going to win with that? And so they, big deal, they ended up playing for the 1980 team that won the gold. But it was a struggle. But my defense partner that year was a guy named Reed Larson, who obviously went on to have a terrific pro career, and he was tough, and he could do
big
so many
shot,
things.
Dude.
Great shot. And so that first half of the year, we really struggled. And I remember we were playing a two-game series in Notre Dame, and we lost the first game. And I said to him, I said to him after the game, I said, Herb, I said, I need to talk to you. And he said, get showered up. He said, I'll wait for you and we'll walk back to the hotel. So he says, what's up? I said, Herb, you got a problem with this. You know, you're starting to have a problem with this group. I said, because the only guy that you haven't got on yet through this first half of the season is Reed Larson. I said, that's the only guy. And I said, you know what? I said, guys are getting upset. You know, why is he on me all the time? And why is he giving, Reed makes all these mistakes. He gives up goals. He gives the puck away. He plays half the game, and he's making all these mistakes, and it's never his fault, but it's always our fault. And Herb looked at me, and he said, let me tell you something, Joe. He said, if I said to Reed Larson what I said to you, we'd lose him for the rest of the season. The only chance we have of making the playoffs and going for a run is if Reed Larson can play his best hockey. I treat him differently because I have to, and I understand who he is. So he said, now I need your support. But that's him. It was an understanding. And so until you really start to learn and understand what he's trying to tell you in his message, then you go, oh, okay. Now it's starting to make sense. And so that's why when it came to 1980 and all those shenanigans and everything he was doing with the players and getting on players and having the assistant coach, it was all part of his plan. It was all part of how can I get the most out of this group. I don't hate anybody, but I need to get them to a level where they're a team. That's him.
You know, it's interesting. The great coaches don't treat everybody the same, but they have the finger on the pulse of the ones who can take it and the ones who can't take it, compared to the ones who always say, team, 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 I'm going to treat everybody the same. Those guys don't find themselves having a job for long.
No, because you can't treat everybody the same because no one's the same.
Yeah.
You just can't. And so you've got to find a way to maximize their potential. And he was a master.
Joe Micheletti is our guest. KMOX. We'll be back after this.
This is a special edition of the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More, sponsored by the world-famous Fast Eddie's Bonaire. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
We're back with Joe Micheletti. Just an incredible career. Let's move on to when you joined the St. Louis Blues and you were part of one of the best teams in the history of the organization, a 100-point team. You guys battled all the way down to, the final week against the New York Islanders to see who was going to have the best record overall. What made that team so special?
I think what makes any great team special in most cases is you have to have a group of players that will do everything together and back each other and be with each other and care for each other. And then, of course, you have to have talent. I mean, you have to have talent in order to win. So we had a team we could score, even though that's what really hurt us in the playoffs and I think why we lost. But we had two really good offensive lines. We had good penalty killers in Larry Patey, and I think Larry Patey had a 20-goal season that year. And we had, I think maybe we had 11 players that had
20-goal scores.
So we had a checking line that could score. We had toughness to our team. We had a great goaltender in Mike Liute.
And the North Stars come back to center. Here is Payne around Komodowski, in on goal. Liute, sprawling save to Rob Payne on a great play by the Blues goaltender. Schmier held it in. Back of the net, out in front to Payne. Another great save. Another shot. And Tim Young shot it wide of the open goal. Here's a shot from the point that goes off the Blues player, Zouk, and up over the glass. And listen to this crowd for Mike Cleout, a standing ovation for two great saves on Payne.
Which you have to, even to this day, and, you know, if you don't have goaltending, you can't win. I don't care what kind of team you have. And so, and then we kind of had that special bond. And then we had Red Berenson, who was our coach. And it was so unfortunate that Red didn't make it through, halfway through the next season after that. He should have. But to me, he was a tremendous coach.
You know, he was just recently honored here in St. Louis. 50 years ago, right. He scored these 6 goals. But what an incredible career he had, not only as a player, but as a coach, certainly in the NHL for a brief period of time, but his college career is one that's unparalleled.
Well, he cares about people. Yeah. And that was the thing about Red, and players that would criticize Red on the professional level said, well, he didn't communicate. Well, here's what Red did. He communicated, but he made sure that it was well thought out. When he addressed us as a group, he was so prepared. Every point he was going to make, here's why he's making the point. And that's what he was. He didn't mince words. He didn't take time. He made his point. He moved on. And what better way to get a point across and be prepared and be smart and be enthusiastic? And that's how Red was. I loved playing for Red.
You know, that's one thing we don't see enough of in coaching. That ability to communicate and be prepared. You mentioned Herb Brooks. You talk about Red Berenson. Where did the disconnect come? Because we see a lot of players not connecting with coaches today.
I think it's difficult. I think coaching is such a difficult profession these days. Listen, I don't begrudge, you know, these players for making the kind of money they do. Or, you know what? Maybe I do. Because I probably wouldn't be sitting here
exactly.
with you.
Exactly.
Okay, so I do begrudge them. What are they doing making all
exactly.
that money? No, but on a serious note, it's, you know, when players make this kind of money at such young ages, there's an effect. It's a natural effect. You know, you can't blame them, but there's this natural effect of being comfortable financially, which everyone wants to be. Mm-hmm. And so it makes coaching, I think, that much more difficult, because what do you have left as a coach for discipline? You know what you have? Yeah. A healthy scratch.
Exactly.
You have a healthy scratch. And I see this young coach for the New York Rangers, his first year in the league. Guess what? You want to play? You don't want to work? Healthy scratch. And you explain it. So, so I think that's one of the things that makes it difficult. And I think it's like everything else, Mike. Everything evolves, right? Everything changes. Attitudes change. The way the game is played now has changed an awful lot. And it's not the same. I'm not saying it's worse or better or anything else. I'm more of a dinosaur in the sport, so there's some things from the previous
years.
You're
not by yourself.
That I would rather see. And but it's just the evolvement of the game, and I still think the game is tremendous. But the coaching aspect is difficult.
You had a little run with coaching after your career ended, and that was kind of like, I thought, the time when things started to transition from players and the entitlement aspect, and really putting themselves in a position where they could get a coach fired. What was your experience like?
See, I loved what I did as an assistant. Because to me, the fun part of that was, and this was in the old days when you take the tape out of the machine that you just and bring it home. And yeah. I remember staying up. We'd have the game that night, and I'd stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, going through the tape and then writing down the number of where I could go back and find things. Is much different than the digital technology we have today, but. Especially with individual players, and then you could bring an individual player in and show them and talk about that and try and make the player better. And that was a really fun aspect of it. But but I've always been one where I don't like ceilings. I don't like hitting my head on a ceiling. I want to go my own way, say what I want, do what I want. And so you have restrictions, it was the restrictive part of that I wasn't all that fond of.
Then you decided to have the broadcasting bug bite you. What were the early days like? Because, everybody thinks this is an easy gig, but there has to be a little work put into it.
I was awakened to that in a real hurry, because, like so many St. Louis people, to sit in your car at home, watch the local sports scene, and have Jack Buck.
Strike one to Ozzie. open day in the American League playoffs. They'll play at Toronto tomorrow night. They play Ozzie to the opposite field. Here's the pitch. Swing and a pop foul, strike two. And he's hard to handle the smoking Tom Niedenfuhr.
He's trying to pull the ball.
Niedenfuhr is 6'5", 225. Big man from the North Country, Minnesota. First baseman and the third baseman guard the lines. Ozzie with one out. Took a ball just outside. Cardinals have left 10 men on, and they left a lot of men on early. And a runner at third, nobody out in the first and didn't score. Second and third, one out in the second and didn't score. Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. It's a home run, and the Cardinals have won the game by the score of 3-2 on a home run by the Wizard. Go crazy.
Dan Kelly.
Plager plays it off the boards to McCreary. Billy McCreary stick handles to his own line, comes to center. A long shot into the corner. Greg Cameron and Hull go in there after it. McCreary gets it to Schock, and Schock couldn't get his shot away. Now Bob Plager, a shot, he scores! St. Marseille to Sabourin. Sabourin centering it. Here's Berenson into Goyette, out in front to McCreary, and he can't get a shot. Bill McCreary for the Blues works it in front himself to Goyette. Goyette. Back that shot. He scores! Bill Goyette scoring for the Blues while the Blues had the power play. And the crowd goes wild. Listen to the arena in St. Louis after the Blues go ahead 2-0. Gilbert Perreault out of his own end of the rink, coming to center ice. Perreault spins away from a check by St. Marseille. Then St. Marseille checked him on the next turn. Here's St. Marseille to center into Thompson on the left wing at a bad angle. Thompson cuts in behind that net, trying to center it back on the point to Billy Plager. The shot! Crozier the safe, Sabourin. Could he scores? Gary Sabourin, with a second of the night, makes it 5-1.
From the faceoff, the puck comes to center ice. Bob Plager, a shot, he scores!
Bob Plager, a shot from center ice that hit the Detroit defense and changed direction. And Gotti may have been the man that changed the direction of the puck. And the Blues go ahead, 3-2.
Wilson out of his own zone. Wilson, left wing pass to Lepley. Lepley into the Kansas City zone. Stops back to Gassop at the point of drive. Right on, Heron kicked it out. Now Plante into the corner, centers to Lepley. Lepley shoots Heron. The save, loose puck. What a poke at it. The score! Pierre Plante has the hat trick. And the Blues lead 6-1.
We're ready to go with the opening faceoff. Here at the St. Louis Arena, referee Brian Lewis drops the puck and the Bruins get it to the St. Louis blue line. Here's Gassop to Sanderson at center. He played it off the boards back into the Boston zone. Gilbert back to the net, lost it to LaRose to Sanderson. He scores! Sanderson set up by LaRose after only 10 seconds as they cut Gilbert off to one side of the net.
Back comes McMillan to Unger at center. Gary Unger into the Leafs zone, lets the slap shot go. He scores! Unger breaks the shutout and gets his 300th National Hockey League goal here.
Now Federko cleared it into the Buffalo zone. Schoenfeld got it to the line. Aplek held it in. His shot is wide. And Fogelin has it for Buffalo. Tried to clear it out. Bob Plager held it in. His shot is high off the glass. Now Bourbonnais back for Aplek. Centers to Federko. Scores! Federko, the rookie, gets his second goal in as many games. Labatt holding it in, a shot, and Millen the save. Zouk behind the net, Sutter scores! Ryan Sutter gets his 40th of the year. Zouk grabs him the puck, and the whole Blues bench empties to congratulate Ryan Sutter on his 40th goal of the year.
And the North Stars come back to center. Here is Payne around Komodowski, in on goal. Leuk, sprawling save to Rob Payne on a great play by the Blues goaltender. Schmier held it in. Back of the net, out in front to Payne. Another great save. Another shot. And shot from the point that goes off the Blues player Zook and up over the glass. And listen to this crowd for Mike Cleout, a standing ovation for two great saves on Payne.
Stewart for St. Louis on left wing to Pedersen. Right wing pass to Babich. He breaks in. Babich hit on goal, shoot. He scores! Babich gets his 50th of the year. Cuts the Montreal lead to 4-2. And Wayne Babich is the first Blues scorer in history to score 50 goals.
Now Zook wins the faceoff to Micheletti over to Lapointe. Lapointe in across the line in the Pittsburgh zone. He tries to center one. Zook gets it back to the goal and puts it to Crombie. He scores! Mike Crombie!
By number 17.
And the Blues again! And Joe Morin scores again! On a centering pass from the corner. And the Blues come right back and score again, and it's the same man, the rookie up from Salt Lake City, Joe Mullen, and he, in the last 20 seconds, just may have won himself a job.
Here come the Blues again. Pedersen to Mullen, a shot, he scores! Paterko on this power play to Ramage. Ramage shoots. He scores! Rob Ramage! And Chico Rush throws his goal stick in disgust and throws his glove in disgust. And the Blues win in overtime. 6-5.
Dan Dierdorf.
But you see, our team doesn't exist anymore. A big part of our life has been removed. And that team has packed its bags. It's gone to Phoenix. And I think I speak for all these guys that when they left, they didn't take us with them. That we have found out that St. Louis is our home more than the Cardinals were our team.
Bob Costas, when he was here doing Sports Open Line.
As you said, when something doesn't work, and in the short term, at least, this hasn't worked, then it looks like the approach was wrong. So with that in mind, with that as the stipulation, we'll still ask, did the wrong message get sent to him last year, for example, game one of the division series against Atlanta? Daryl Kyle goes to the interview room, and Keel's going to be the starter. Now in spring training, he has mysterious warm-ups, you know, shrouded in secrecy, that kind of thing. Did that send a message to Rick and Keel, we're so concerned about you that we think you're especially fragile, we have to handle you with special care, and might that have reinforced whatever it is that's troubling him?
Jay Randolph.
It was Mr. Hyland and Jack Buck who brought me to St. Louis in late May of 1966. That was an important time in my life because it was also a time when I married Sue Henderson, a beautiful woman from Dallas, Texas, and brought her up to the Midwest. I think about the opportunities that I've had in the sports business and the people that I've worked with, and if I started telling stories, we would be here all night, as you all well know.
And I can go on and on. We had a myriad of great, great broadcasters, Hall of Fame broadcasters, and they made it sound easy. So when you're sitting at home, you're going, you know, these guys, they just have fun. They go there, they go in the booth, and they just talk when it's time to talk. You know, yeah, they just talk when it's time for them to talk. And so so I'll never forget the first game I ever worked broadcasting. That was, you know, Dan Kelly hired me, which was my greatest blessing in this business. And the first game we ever worked was a preseason game, Blues in Detroit in Peoria, Illinois. And I didn't know the first thing about broadcasting. Dan said we were going to spend some time. He hired me late in the summer. We had a game to do 2 weeks later, a preseason game. I didn't even have a pencil on me. And because, of course, my thinking was you just go and you show up like Jack Buck and Bob Costas and Dierdorf and just roll it out when it's your turn to talk. And so, of course, about 7 minutes into the first period and the Blues scored and Dan, you know, his famous goal call, and right in the middle of that, I said something, And he looked at me, and he sent it to commercial break, and he said to me, "You ever do that again, you're fired." And I said, "Do what?" And he says, "Talk when I'm talking." And it was a great lesson, and I miss him so much, and he's the reason I'm here today.
Joe Micheletti is our guest, KMOX. We'll be back after this.
This is a special edition of the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More, sponsored by the world-famous Fast Eddie's Bonaire. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue with Joe Micheletti. I thought your coming out party when it came to broadcasting was when you and Ken Wilson got together.
Then Chase misses a check from Cummins, drops his glove. Chase and Jim Cummins. Cummins, a first-year player out of college, and Chase. Cummins throws a right that misses. Chase grabs him. They're going to let him go. The referee, Dan Marinelli, taking care of all the other players, telling them to go to center ice. Cummins and Chase really going at it in the corner, and Chase certainly holding his own, getting some good cuts in on the 22-year-old out of Michigan State, Jim Cummins. Now they're up against the boards. Chase with his back to the glass. But Cummins not getting anything really free. Chase strong, tough, and Chase has proven in his NHL career as a fighter to be very durable. Boy, they're still going. They've got to be exhausted by now. Oh, and Cummins missed with a roundhouse right. And Chase got in a swing, and Cummins went flying to the ice, and Jim Cummins get into a great fight. Now Probert's going to go with Lowry. Everybody goes. Then Zombo and McCrimmon, and everybody pairs up. It's out of control. McCrimmon's down on the ice. Zombo, here comes Chevalier. He'll be thrown out of the game. Chevalier. Now Joseph gets into it. Joseph grabs Chevalier, and the two goalies go at it head to head, and Joseph with three great rights to Chevalier. And we've got some terrific fights going on.
And Cummins came out of the penalty box as well.
There are sticks and gloves everywhere. The two goalies having a great fight at center ice. For those of you watching that on television, we'll try to update you on everyone else. Dan Marinelli has Cummins out of things. The two linesmen are working on separating Lowry and Probert. Bassin is out there tied up with one of the wings players. And now I guess fatigue setting in a bit. Holy cow, what a way to begin a night of hockey here at the arena in St. Louis.
And I'll go back to a couple of playoff series, Chicago, Toronto, where you guys just seemed like you were on an incredible page together.
I had a lot of fun with Ken. I really did. Ken had the great set of pipes. Yeah. He was so enthusiastic. You know, I was sorry to see all that go down the way it went down. I was already, you know, gone in New York at the time when all that happened. But I have nothing but good things to say about Ken Wilson and our time together. We, you know, he let me do a lot of the work that an analyst is supposed to do, and you know he's one of the guys that still believe that, you know, there's a separation between play-by-play and analysis. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to try and analyze. You don't try to do play-by-play. Perfect with me. It would work. It was good with him, and so he allowed me to do that work, use that information when it was appropriate. And we had a good run together, and we had fun together.
Yeah, you know, I had a chance to visit with him, and he basically said the same thing about how much he enjoyed working with you, because he's a man of few words when there's no action.
No, that's right. And you know, when he started talking about politics, and I'm in New York, and I'm listening to this, and I got friends calling me and saying he's going to go into politics. I said, wait a second, this got to be a different Ken Wilson. That's not the one I know.
Yeah, he was fun. All right, you have a great run in St. Louis, and I'll say that you and Kenny may have been as good of a broadcast team as Blues fans have ever had a chance to watch and listen to. But then you get the call to go to New York. And I know that was a little bit of a tough decision because your family was certainly embedded here in St. Louis. But it was a tough call, but you had to do it.
Yeah, It was a really difficult decision because of, you know, because of what St. Louis, you know, meant at the time to me and still means so much to me. And my kids were 11 and 13 at the time. And what had happened, I was working my second Olympics. I was in Japan in 98 working for, I think it was either NBC or CBS at the time. And I got a call from Madison Square Garden in Japan. And this was in February. And they said, you know, we want to talk to you about coming to work for Madison Square Garden, and we want to put you on New York Islander games. And I said, you know, for next season. I said, well, wait a second. I said, isn't Eddie Westfall working those games? And they said, well, yeah, but we're thinking of making a change. I said, wait a second. I said, Eddie Westfall's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I said, does he know this? And they said, well, no. I said, I have no interest in furthering this conversation because Eddie's a friend of mine, and I know how it is to have someone try and take your job because I've been through it. Yeah. And so they said, fair enough. So they called me the following July, I believe it was, and said, we'd like to talk to you about this. And I said, what about Eddie Westfall? And they said, well, we've already talked to Eddie. I said, listen, I'm going to call Eddie, and then I'll call you back. And I called Eddie, and I said, is this true? Is this what? And he said, it's true. He said, I'm going to step down. I'm tired of the travel. And he said, I'll do a little bit, but not much, but not on a full-time basis. And he said, you got my blessing if you want to come here. So that's kind of how it happened. I went to, you know, the Blues brass and Fox Sports and told them what was, you know, that I had been approached to do this. And they just, you know, they gave me their blessing. They, in fact, who was the president at the time? Mark Sauer. Mark Sauer said to me, he said, Joe, he said, Madison Square Garden, if they ever called me to work for them, he said, I would do it in a heartbeat. And you have my blessing. And I still had years left on my contract here. And they said, no, that's, you know, you have our blessing to go. So maybe that was just a good way to get rid of me and my contract.
Yeah, you were making a lot of money there.
I'm looking at it differently. The wrong way, I guess.
Joe Micheletti is our guest. KMOX. We'll be back after this.
This is a special edition of the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More, sponsored by the world-famous Fast Eddie's Bonair. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue with Joe Micheletti. 20 years now in New York, and you've been involved not only on the Ranger broadcast, but also on a national basis with NBC. You've been involved in the Olympics, Stanley Cup playoffs, the whole nine yards. What are some of the memorable moments in your broadcasting career?
Oh, boy. I have... that's such a hard question to answer, Mike, because there have been so many. I think this year will probably be my 20th or 21st year doing the Stanley Cup Finals. Wow. So, for me, what this has been about, you know, there's so many great games, and you know, most of the really great games are playoff games, mm-hmm. right? Because it's a different type of... It's a different type of game. It's a different type of intensity. It's a different type of feel in the building. You know, the players, you know, I tell players this that have never played in a Stanley Cup playoff game, you're going to get out there and you're not going to know what it is because it's something you've never done. And it's a different feeling. You think differently. Your legs feel differently. And until you get the experience of really knowing about it, you have to go through the experience. So, has there been one or not really? But to me, I've just met so many great people over the years, and players. I've seen players start off and, you know, and finish their careers. That's how long I've been in it, you know, and
of those guys end up marrying kids, you know, too.
Yeah, that's true. So. Anyway, Mike, you know, there's so many memories, and I will say this about the broadcasting: the biggest challenge for me that I've ever had professionally in broadcasting has been the Olympics. That is the biggest challenge.
Just the preparation.
The preparation, and during the games themselves, to, you know, what I did to get information for the broadcast, I probably should have been arrested for, and almost was a few times, because you are so cordoned off from getting close to athletes and coaches, and that's where you need to get to get information. And so those games, I worked five of those, and they were, there's no question about it, that it was the biggest challenge. And the atmosphere of the games is something so special and different from NHL hockey.
When we talk about preparation, one of the things that you've always been, you know, the people attribute you and your work in, is finding the tidbits that you can't read about or you can't hear about. And I always go back to, I remember you were talking about Pavel Bure in one of the Olympics having a different type of skate. And I'm saying to myself, only Micheletti could find something like that. But your preparation, and you have been a master at finding the little things and taking notes and doing the little things that most people aren't going to know about, because you went out and found it yourself personally.
Well, I've always thought, first of all, I'm just as petrified now as I was when I first started in this business, because when I first started, and I'm trying to make a living, you know, I got my little son Adam and my little daughter Allison, and I'm trying to make a living, and I was always afraid that I was going to lose my job if I didn't work hard, and so, you know, I always thought I got to try and get something that someone hasn't read about, and so that's always been kind of in the back of my mind. And you can only do that, you can only get those things, if you go to morning skates. And there's not enough broadcasters that do that anymore, that go to, you know, that go to morning skates and talk to players and coaches. And you, if you're not there, you know, there's no chance of you getting it. But if you are there, then I'll give you an example. Last year during the Stanley Cup Final, Kenny Albert and I are doing the games for Westwood One Radio, and we went to one in the morning. We made sure we got to a morning skate in Washington, and he and I were talking to Brooks Orpik, and Brooks Orpik told me, he said, "I almost had my finger severed last night." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "On what play?" And he told me the play, and I remember. So you took a penalty. He says, "Yeah." He said, "That's because I got slashed." Nobody knew it. Kenny and I were the only ones that knew it, and he had to have it sewed back on, and played the next game. And so Kenny and I talked about that on the air, and we went to a commercial. And Kenny said to me, and he works as hard as anybody, he says, "You know what? If we weren't at the morning skate," he said, nobody else knew that but us. And now we got to use it. And so those are the things that you go, you know, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
And
it's stuff that you can be proud of, that you just through work, you know, you found something that somebody didn't have.
Well, we have a new kid on the block here in St. Louis, and Joey Vitale, and he tells a story about the wonderful thing that you did for him and giving him, what, three or four pages of notes that he abides by. I mean, it's the Micheletti rules. It's the Micheletti commandments. And just for you to reach out and do that for a guy who had not done this before just says a lot about your character.
Oh, listen, this has nothing to do with me. First of all, he's not supposed to be telling those stories.
Well, he told it on the radio, so I think the cat's out of the bag.
Wait till I see him. He's, you know, Joey, I've always admired him as a player and his work ethic. And, you know, he went through difficult times with the concussions, and his career ended, you know, earlier than it should have. And he's a good St. Louis kid. And so anyway, but listen, Dan Kelly did that, you know, Dan Kelly did that for me and helped me. And so did other people. And so, you know, I mean, it was
It was your turn.
To me, it's just, you got to try and help people when you can help them. And so.
Do you think enough of that goes on in our industry?
No. No, because there's too many paranoid people, and it's a difficult industry because there's only so many of these jobs that are out there. So, and you know what? I mean, and it's difficult not to get upset when you know somebody else is trying to get your job. But that's kind of the way it is. But it's still you can leave a mark, you know. And maybe Mike, 15 years ago, maybe I wouldn't have done it. Maybe 20 years ago, I wouldn't have done it. You know. I don't know. I'm not anything special, but I wanted to help him, and I didn't want him to say, this is the way you have to do it. This is how I do it, so it's right. My way is not a right way. It's just the way I do it, and it's important for Joe to be himself. And all I wanted to do was give him some pointers and some things to think about. And then allow him to use his work ethic, which he's always had, and build that into something that's hopefully going to make him great at what he does.
Well, he's gotten off to a great start because of the hard work and because of your advice, and he's going to have a great career. You've had a great career, and it continues to go on. This has been a blast for me. You and I have been friends for a long time, and to have a chance to sit down with you today is a treat for me.
No, the treat's all mine, but why do you want me to quit?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't.
I don't. No, okay. No. Right. I said having, not had.
I guess I took that wrong.
No.
Pleasure's mine, buddy.
You keep doing this, man, because you're good at it, and people rely on you and just what you provide to viewers and listeners. And we remember you as a player, but more importantly, we appreciate you as a friend.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. It's always a pleasure.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.